You're listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Hello, hello, dear friends. It's so good to be with you. I am back in studio after literally, I've been calling myself a mute girl lately. For those who don't know, in Southern California, we're experiencing the super bloom right now because of all the rain that we actually got in the midst of basically arid desert and constant drought here. And so I have been mute. Like, I had no voice for two whole days, and I'm on day like 10 right now. So I'm here to join me this week from the sunny Southern California is Patrick Reedy in studio.
Hi, Timmery. Great to be on the show. And I also have to excuse my own mute voice from several speaking engagements and constant and nonstop teaching over the last couple of weeks. So we're peas in a pod here in the Southern California studio.
That is a challenge of living in such a dry climate and speaking sometimes like, oh, where's my humidifier? I was talking to someone the other day and they were talking about how they put on a humidifier and they were talking about how they had family members. They're like, yeah, we need the humidifier, set it up. Like, our voices are killing us. And so he puts on the humidifier and he said some of his family members are like, oh my gosh, you got to open the windows. Like, it is so stuffy in here. And so he looks at them and you're like, come on, are you serious? I thought you wanted the humidifier on. The point is to get moisture in here. It's right. Supposed to be stuffy. But us in California don't do humidity.
No. And if when you walk around California, everybody has a their own water bottle. Nobody just gets water. There's no more water fountains. We have at our school hydration stations. Mm-hmm. And so students can fill up their water bottles constantly. And I used to make fun of that when I first got here, but now I'm catching on that there is a reason why people are hydrating 24/7. You really do need it.
Oh.
Especially if you want to have a speaking voice.
When you're not in a humid climate. I didn't realize that. Interesting. Okay, so where are you from originally?
I am from, you can't tell by the accent apparently, but those Midwesterners out there who are listening can hear my Chicago accent.
Chicago.
I'm from the Chicago area, yes.
My husband's from Peoria, Illinois, but does not have that Chicago accent.
No, you got to get a couple hundred miles closer to Chicago to pick up this incredible accent.
So my guest today, Patrick Reedy, and I are going to be talking a lot about the gender ideology crisis. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the importance of living as male and female. Get this. We're going to be talking about this later on. A man is identifying as a dog and actually wrote a manual as how to live the fetish of being a dog. We're going to come back to that. In the meantime, my guest, Patrick Reedy, is the Vice President of Mission and Faith at J. Sarah Catholic High School here in Southern California, fighting to really bring Orthodox Catholicism in the midst of a very secular culture here in Southern California. But he also has a great background in working with men. He's been the adjunct professor at St. John Vianney Catholic Seminary in Denver and St. Patrick's Catholic Seminary in San Francisco.
That's correct.
So you've worked a lot with male formation, seminary formation in particular over the years. So you have great insight into living as male and female.
Yes. And I also worked in all boys schools for 11 years, which is a far cry from co-ed schools. The school I work at now is co-ed. So it's hard to mistake the difference between men and women when you're working in a school. So some more insights on that to come.
Wonderful. We'll be talking a little later in the show about artificial intelligence. And I think this is really relevant to the whole transgender issue, especially, you know, there's a girl, we'll talk about this later, a young woman, high school age, and I am so proud of her. There's a video of her online and she's talking about how she was changing in the locker room and she suddenly heard a man's voice behind her in the girls' high school locker room. Coming up later on the show, we'll be talking about that. Right now, Patrick, I want to talk about artificial intelligence a little bit. Now, you know, we've seen so many of the current television shows. I mean, one in particular, I know it ended a few years ago, but our Catholic homie here, Jim Caviezel, Diesel, who was in Person of Interest. Did you ever see an episode of the show?
A couple episodes.
Mm-hmm. A really fascinating show, and it really focused around the idea of the government has the ability to oversee everything that you do, and with that create algorithms to make assumptions about the possibility of a terrorist attack or violence or anyone, even a small car accident that might happen. And what happens in the show is the government then determines, okay, what sort of crime do we stop and what do we continue to allow to move on? And so Jim Caviezel, really the hero of the show, decides we need to try to save as many people as possible. We have this information. Why are we putting value on one person's life and no value on another? And that's kind of what we're seeing with artificial intelligence today, AI work. You know, it's implemented into our daily lives, even just through Alexa and Siri. So what are your first thoughts when you think about artificial intelligence as a Catholic? Do you think that people are beginning to dehumanize one another because we're using AI to communicate with each other?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, I go back to my work in schools. About 10 years ago, I saw the shift in the way young people started to interact with each other, mm-hmm. with teachers, and in a certain degree with their parents. And as a keen observer of human nature, right, not a psychologist by any stretch of the imagination, but as someone who tries to understand the human person so to bring the gospel to them more effectively, I started to ask myself, what's going on with kids today? And although I don't think technology is the only culprit.
Would you say what was standing out? Was it awkward communication, lack of communication?
I started to see an increase in engagement in students. An increase in disengagement in the students in their interactions with each other and with other adults. But then I also saw the threshold for maintaining concentration just dropped off the cliff. I mean, we used to say 20 years ago that young people had a 20-minute attention span, and then it went down to 7. They're saying now it's about 2 minutes at max.
Right. And you can really only keep them for about 30-second long, like, YouTube video. That's a and sweet you, spot.
Right, it is. And so the artificial intelligence playing into that, right, the inability to maintain your attention span long enough to have an intelligent thought. But I think there's something else going on that I see is really dangerous with AI. For all of its benefits, I think we run the risk of removing human agency from life and replacing it with artificial agency, robots. And that's a deeper philosophical question, I realize, but there's something very incarnational about human beings being involved in human activity. And when you supplant human agency across the board in a broad sweep, we're guaranteed to damage to some degree the human potential. I don't know how this is gonna play out, but I can see this happening with young people.
Two takes on what you're saying that stand out. One, on a smaller level, there's something great about having someone cook you a homemade meal. It's an act of love, of generosity, of hard work. You know, in different cultures, you know, they have sayings instead of saying thank you for the meal, like bless the hands of the person who made this with great love. And you know, I was talking to someone recently who said, I do not want my meals delivered to me. They're living a really busy lifestyle right now, and they said, I don't want it because I want that love put into my food. And in a way, artificial intelligence is taking that, or even technology in a sense, and I'm not saying that all technology is bad, we're distancing ourselves from doing something for another person. But on a bigger scale, for example, in war right now, we're seeing that drones can go in and accomplish major attacks and kill many people. And it's basically someone operating a video game, and it's dehumanizing the human element of compassion and necessity in hand-to-hand combat.
I agree. And, you know, it's a little bit like the frog in the boiling water effect, that a little bit of technology isn't bad, even a little more technology isn't bad, but at what point do we cross the threshold into losing too much of our own humanity? I think we start with even a simpler example than war, which would be the infrequency with which a human person answers a telephone when you call a place of business. And there's something very refreshing about a human person answering, saying, hello, can I help you? And you get to have a conversation. Again, none of this is bad, right? We're trying to cut corners, but...
Okay, but an honest question. Would you rather the automated system or an accent you really cannot understand?
Well, I tend to pick up the accent that I'm hearing, so then it becomes a fun conversation when I'm speaking the same way the person is,
And then you're so really confusing them. I like to go with it. Oh my goodness. Well, here's why I brought this up, because the Pontifical Academy for Life has actually been commissioned to take up the issue of studying artificial intelligence. Because the concern is that as we're essentially humanizing technology, and we're dehumanizing the person. Later on the show, you're going to hear more about the transgender issue, about how we're now saying we don't know the difference between male and female. I think part of that has to do with our lack of ability to communicate. That's at the core of being a person. Adam was alone in the garden, we read, and it was not good because he was alone. There was no one that could communicate with him on the same level.
Reminds me of a scene from a great movie, which I believe is rated R, so proceed with caution if you're a parent out there. But it's rated R mainly, I think, for violence. It's called I Am Legend. You can check the rating yourself. I Am Legend is about... Will Smith plays the main character. Have you seen this movie? It's a great film.
A few years ago, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And he... there was a cure for cancer that was created.
He has a son in the movie, right?
He doesn't have a son. It starts out he's got a daughter, but they think they've cured cancer on the island of New York. But it ends up that the side effects from the serum creates zombies.
Yes.
That's why it's right. So you got to be, you know, some people are more afraid of zombies than others. So you got to be careful watching. My sister had nightmares after she watched it, but she still thought it was worthwhile. Will Smith ends up staying on the island of New York City alone. He's a military guy with his dog to try to fight off these zombies. And he's a doctor. He says, I want to come up with a cure. And at a certain point, he walks into a store where he's collecting goods so he can survive. And there's a mannequin in the store. And he walks up to her and he says hello. And then he says hello again. And then he goes almost into a bit of a fit. He says, well, would you please just tell me hello? Please just say hello. And I remember watching the movie for the first time. I said, what's happening? Is he just going mad?
Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Patrick Reedy in studio here with Timmery Jaja. I am really interested. You were telling the story, Patrick, about from the movie I Am Legend, right? That's the correct name.
Correct. I Am Legend.
With Will Smith. And you're talking about how he comes up to the mannequin. He's trying to talk and he wants this interaction, reaction from the mannequin. Isn't that what we're doing with our phones and our constant checking, waiting for a notification, waiting for an instant response? We expect our phones to give us the immediate response that, like, whacking someone on the shoulder eventually will do if they're not answering by name. And this is part of the concern with artificial intelligence. It takes away both the biological and the spiritual element of the person. We're getting so used to relying on technology that we're dehumanizing ourselves. I mean, this is why, for example, we're saying men and women are interchangeable, because we're so used to communicating with people via technology.
I think you're right. And so John Paul II said, you always have to affirm what is true in culture. And so one of the things I think is important for us as Catholics is to not simply condemn anything that might lead us down the wrong path simply because we don't have the virtue to use it properly. And I think we see this happening with technology, Timmery. So I look at technology and the fact that almost everybody's addicted to these things.
Right.
My students will say, is it okay? Are we obsessed with this? And they'll say, no, Mr. Reedy, addicted. That's the real word. They tell me they're addicted. And I'll say, well, just put it down. We can't, right? It's like a drug. I love it and I hate it at the same time. But it does say something about our longing for communion.
Mm.
The fact that we just can't put these down, the fact that we're impatient for people's responses on the phone, I think demonstrates more than ever before in history the reality that human beings want to be in constant interaction with others. We want total communion, just like we promise in our wedding vows. Congratulations for being married very recently,
you.
Right in February. And I'm just celebrating 2 years.
2 years.
2 years. I'm glad you didn't wait as long as I did in your life to get married.
If we have time, I'd like to come to that and how you met your spouse.
I would love
later
to tell you the story.
Show.
No one ever gets tired of telling that story, right? But we're made for a total fruitful communion. And I think there's something about the telephones, in a sense, that are an icon into the human soul's hunger for constant communion.
Mm.
it shows us that really we're in constant communion for the only one who can be with us all the time, which mm-hmm. is the divine one, right? The Trinity. Yet when you remove God from the social fabric, then something's going to take his place. And boy, it's just so hard to put this down if you're not being filled up moment by moment by God's grace, because you have a deep intimacy with yeah. him.
And isn't it interesting that I think one of the greatest distractions, I know for me personally, and I hear people saying it from prayer today, is the constant element of being plugged in. It's impossible to disconnect. So we're trying to pray. Prayer itself is hard enough
our
distractions. And then all of a sudden there's a little vibrate, or there's a little beep, or there's something. Or for me, I actually have to put my phone out of sight, because just seeing it is a reminder of the people to be in contact with for me. And it's actually, for me personally, overwhelmingly distracting.
Mm-hmm. One of the challenges that you mentioned, Tim Marie, is that rather than increasing our communication in a certain sense, technology is increasing communication on a superficial level, at least, and it's really helpful. I mean, let's face it. Aren't you glad that text exists?
Oh, yes.
I mean, there are just times where you say, okay, I don't have time to get on the phone or have a five-minute conversation, but I just need this question answered.
Yes. Especially when you have no voice for two whole days. I'm like texting my mom and everyone back like, no voice, what's up?
It really does come in handy. We need to be super grateful for technology. But at the same time, because, and I use this phrase before, because we don't have the virtue to monitor these things. We don't know how to use this in moderation yet. I think overall, it's having a negative effect on the way young people who didn't grow up without a cell phone communicate with one another. And I think this is really key. If between you and me, there's always a screen, then I never get to see the full person and God expressing himself through the person of you. And God created man and woman to be sacraments of his own divine life and love. And one of the deepest joys in life is the bonding that we experience when we encounter the beauty of God deeply imprinted in the other person. The danger we're in, I think the risk we're running by kind of eroding our capacity to encounter the other person, is that we don't encounter God sacramentally through that person as a result.
Through technology.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
There's that. Let's actually bring into this conversation, because it really is relevant in this conversation of AI. Here's this man that has recently come out. He wrote a book a couple years ago. And this book is titled This, Dog Training, How to Train a Human Pup. Mm. This man identifies as a dog. And in the description of his book, which, by the way, is available on Amazon, it talks about like kind of giving into your fetish of living as a dog. Now, he's using all of the same terminology that a person who identifies as transgender uses, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. he does not mm-hmm. feel like he is a man, that look between the legs, that assignation mm-hmm. at birth is not what he identifies mm-hmm. with. And I think that part of that, so many people are, we're living in a time where mental illness is so severe. The reality is the psychological associations for decades have recognized gender dysphoria as a dysphoria up until more recently. Why is it that this man is at this state in his life and it's being put on national television, for example, in Canada as entertainment?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is where we're at. I think it comes to that dehumanization and lack of understanding of who am I?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're really in, we've grown from individuals having a personal identity crisis to a cultural identity crisis that in some ways we're feeding into. It's a really, really big question, right? How did we get here? When we consider how, as a culture, we could embrace the transgender moment, it's really confusing, because I think there are a lot of things that play into it. But it reminds me, I have an Irish background. And of course, that the Irish and the English have not always had the most, let's just say there's been a bit of antipathy between these two countries. And there are a lot of jokes that go back and forth. And the Irish are very witty. So it reminds me of a story that I read that is purported to be a true story about a British ship in the Irish seas and a radio communication between these two ships. And the radio communication went something like this. The Irish radio sounded and said, please divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid collision. Right away, British radio come back and said, recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the north to avoid collision. Irish, negative. You'll have to divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid collision. British, this is the captain of a British Navy ship. I say again, divert your course.
Standoff.
The standoff is on. British, the Irish came back and said, negative. I say again, you will have to divert your course. And then the British said this, we are the aircraft carrier HMS Britannia, the second largest ship in the British Atlantic fleet. We're accompanied by three destroyers, three cruisers, and numerous support vessels. I demand that you change your course 15 degrees north, or we will take countermeasures to protect our vessel. And then the British commander heard this come back over the radio. We are a lighthouse. Your call. Of course, I love that first because I'm Irish, right? And I think, yeah, we got you again. To all my British friends out there, Father Emmanuel, Mary Mansford of the CFRs, hope you're listening. But I also love it because I think that's a really great anecdote to describe what's been going on in our culture. We're in a, you might call it a metaphysical fog, an ontological fog. We've become untethered from the foundations of reality, which are God living in man. We've lost a sense of our anthropology. I'm using a lot of big philosophical words, but our understanding of who man and woman are grounded in God. And once that happens, the ship just is inevitably going to go off course.
Well, and isn't it interesting that although there's a little bit of a kind of a rivalry between the two, in a sense, there are expectations that both quote unquote ships have of each other. But the reality is the whole time one is a lighthouse and it knows what it can do and it's trying to give guidance, but the other is not recognizing it for what it is. And maybe it's ignorance, maybe, you know, whatever it might be. The reality is it probably should have known it was a lighthouse and treated it as a lighthouse. But there's that lack of communication. I think that's where the question comes back to. Who am I? What am I made for? And because we have, become so disconnected from reality, we can't even answer that question. Like, I know if someone were to ask me, who are you? I would honestly answer first and foremost, I'm Catholic.
Yeah.
Because that's what gives me my identity and grounds me in what is real.
I think you're right. And our culture has done a great job over the last decades and maybe century deconstructing the Judeo-Christian worldview. The problem is, once you eliminate that foundation, it has to be replaced with something. But we know as Catholics, there's nothing with which you can replace that really works.
Yeah.
And so I see our culture, our overly secularized culture, much like the British, sorry Brits, much like the British ship, with a little bit too much bravado. Right. And not realizing that it's heading on a collision course. Heard somebody say recently, and I just love this analogy because I really think this describes well the sort of the blind charging forward with ideas not rooted in truth or reality, in natural law or in Christian Judeo moral principles. As a culture, we think we're flying, but in reality, we're falling.
Mm.
And sooner or later, we're going to hit rock bottom and there's going to be a lot of fallout.
And this is part of the problem when we think we're just a cog in the machine rather than someone to be loved. That's when the problem comes. And that's what's been so powerful about St. John Paul the Great's theology of the body being continuously communicated right now, is it saying your very body is made to be a sacrificial gift. And that's the science of the theology of the body. I am made to be a gift. Every day I'm meant to live and every day I'm meant to die to myself, to give myself to others. So we'll be coming back in just a minute here with Patrick Reedy on Trending with Timory. Don't go away. Head over to radiotrending.com to learn a little bit more about my guest and listen to more episodes.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's TIMMERIE. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Good to be back. With me in studio is Patrick Reedy. I love, I've been meaning to get you on the show for a while because it's really Patrick Coffin who's guilty for introducing us.
He's guilty of a lot of things, by the way, and this is only one of his crimes.
And so every time we've talked on the phone, it's been like this long back and forth engagement. I'm thinking it's always such a great conversation. We've got to share that on air.
The feeling is mutual.
So
it's great to be here.
Thanks for being with us. So his background really is in male formation, to be put it. You have worked with seminarians, you've worked in all boys schools, you're now the head of, in many ways, formation at J. Sarah High School now. And so it's interesting because right now, formation as male, formation as female is so rejected in our community. Yet at the same time, if a psychologist comes in, for example, to Fairfax County in Virginia and wants to do a workshop to help parents understand, and this is the title of the workshop, Jack and Jill, Gender Differences Matter, with regard to learning, they're invited in as psychologists and educators. However, the same exact Fairfax County, Virginia school board just a couple years ago forced upon their entire school district that they removed any reference to biological sex in all sex education programs. So it's sitting here saying we should educate you as male and female and recognize that, but biologically, there are no differences.
Well, yeah, the fog is thickening, the fog that we mentioned before. And the challenge is, especially in a school, is how do you teach what we believe as Catholics to be scientifically, anatomically true about male and female, and at the same time, recognize pastorally that there are young people who are suffering and are confused, and offer them a helping hand. The state is not helping. Because the state is coming in a, what I would call a real, well, and this is not my phrase, but a dictatorship, right? Pope Benedict talked about the dictatorship of relativism. There's almost a despotic, tyrannical pushing for this new worldview. And the question is going to be, what's going to happen when Catholic schools, Catholic institutions refuse to comply? And there are a lot of stories out there about Catholic hospitals, Catholic schools, Catholic institutions now coming face to face with legal battles because they're refusing to acquiesce to the cultural understanding of biology versus gender. In our school, we haven't had to confront this really yet, but as you can see in the culture, it's becoming more and more of an issue.
It's actually quite a surprise that you haven't had to face the issue, because I can tell you, so many of the Catholic schools, charter schools I'm running across, are regularly having at least one student, something's going on. And the problem is, especially here in the state of California, teachers are being educated and trained that if a child comes out, no matter what age, it could be a kindergartner, is identifying as transgender or same-sex attracted in any way, they're actually not even to notify the parent here in the state of California. That's what the school teachers are being taught, because they're saying the parents may be ill-equipped or have some sort of moral religious bias that would prevent them from affirming the child in their given orientation rather than affirming and loving them as their beloved child to begin with. And so they're saying, yeah, let's get them counselors and education, and let's not tell the parents. This is a scary point in history. And that's what's kind of interesting and shocking about what happened in Fairfax County. It was actually 83% of the parents opposed the removal of any reference to biological sex in sex education. I mean, we know, but sex education alone is a whole nother thing that we might object to and have some concerns with. But this is a reality. That 98% of boys who are prepubescent, who are experiencing some sort of gender dysphoria, 98% of them end up overcoming that and understanding their biological sex by the time they go through puberty. And 88% of girls. So that's almost 10 out of 10 for boys and almost 9 out of 10 for girls.
Yeah, you're right. And so one of the things that it's hard to understand is how quickly as a culture we've given in to some of these new ideas that 10 years ago, definitely 20 years ago, would have seemed so outlandish, we wouldn't have even countenanced them, specifically even of some of the contradictions in the law. Some parents are called the primary educators of their children, and you even hear that language used in public schools, right? There's a certain respect given for parents to educate their children.
But that's also a Catholic worldview.
That's certainly a Catholic worldview. When it comes to this issue, however, there is no equity. And parents are being told that the state knows better than they do, and that children, even at 3, 4, 5 years old, can recognize that they're possibly not really the gender that they were assigned at birth. And I'm using, if you can't see me, if you're listening on the radio, right? I'm using the air quotes because these are all words drive our ideas, and ideas drive our concepts and our culture. And so we're really, really adept in our culture at changing words, right? Pro-choice, not pro-abortion, so that we can try to change people's mentalities. And that's what's happening in this issue too. And you see it, speaking of the abortion issue, you see this in the abortion issue too, where young girls, we're fighting as a culture to give girls the right to have an abortive procedure without their parents' notification, when that wouldn't happen in any other type of surgery. But for that particular issue, we think differently. And so it's hard not to be convinced that there's, it's hard to not to see that there's an ideology driving all of this. And the question is, how do we continue to stay firm and resist these winds of change so that really in the end, it's not so that we can show, hey, we're Catholic, you can't push us around, but that we believe this is really, our view is what's best for the human person. Mm. One of the things I've seen is that this has come from a long time ago. I've thought a lot about the roots of, like, where did this come from to begin with, right? And I think it really started back in the 1500s with René Descartes, right? Those of you who have studied philosophy know about this, right? They call it the Cartesian turn, where he says, I think, therefore I am. And he separated reality from what was in his mind. Francis Bacon. Right?
What about a person in vegetative state?
Right,
they
right,
may not yep, have yep. intellectual thought, yep. but they are still human beings mm-hmm. worthy of respect.
Yeah, they are. But there were these philosophers back in the 1500s and 1600s who started to separate out reality, create dichotomies, such as, I can only know what's in my mind. I can't know what's in reality. Such as Francis Bacon said, we there's man and there's nature, and we're pitted against each other, and we have to supplant nature. We have to control it. And then Jean-Paul Sartre took those two ideas, put them together, and said, you know, what I feel is what's best, and I need to assert my will over anything that might not conform to what I feel. Boy, now you fast forward a few mm-hmm. hundred years, and you have the sexual revolution that starts to play into this and say, hey, listen, I don't believe in all this morality stuff. That doesn't make me feel good, so it can't be right. And I just have to exert my will over my parents, who are saying I need to follow this old primitive way of the church and over the culture. And we've created this bed out of this flower bed. It's not really a flower bed, it's a bed of weeds out of which this transgender movement has grown. And I think it was just a matter of time before we started to push it over the edge. And here we are today.
Isn't it so, I mean, it just hits you in the face when you understand these philosophical developments and attitudes and thinkings, and how essentially they totally influenced our culture to be where we are at today. And, you know, I look at this and I'm looking at the social pressure that young people are suddenly experiencing to come out as gay or transgender. And it's because this attitude of, well, whatever you feel, you mm-hmm. express. Well, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. teenagers, middle schoolers feel a heck of a lot. Like, it was hard for me to be a middle school student. And I outright say this, girls can be mean. Take it mm-hmm. you know, another 10, 15 mm-hmm. years later now. Mm-hmm. It's even more difficult adding the increased sexualization of our culture, the increase in gender confusion. And you see things such as, you know, the story came out, I was looking at the other day, that a young girls who are suddenly identifying as transgender, here's one story. They had a coach that they loved. It was a, you know, full team. I'm not sure what sport they were playing. They loved this coach. Suddenly the coach comes out as transgender. Guess what? Every single one of these 14-year-old girls on that team, by the end of the year, suddenly were saying they identified as transgender as well. Mm-hmm. They were looking at their mm-hmm. peers. They were trying to fit in. It reminds me exactly of the thing growing up dancing. We would see girls who would suddenly become anorexic, bulimic. Well, all of a sudden, some of the girls thought, well, maybe that's kind of cool too. You know, I can be that trend. I remember mm-hmm. my mom being like, you are going to eat meat. You're going to eat it now.
And dessert.
And dessert. You can have your dessert first. It's probably why she lets us have dessert first when I was growing up. Because you wanted to make sure that you didn't suddenly jump with the wind to get attention and drive your emotions into it. I think transgenderism in some ways modern. Modern day anorexia, in a sense.
That is one of the reasons I love the title for your show, Timmery, right? Trending with Timmery, because trending with Timmery in the truth is what I would like to call it, right? Oh. Trending with Timmery in the truth, because there are a lot of trends out there, and teens go for trends, right? I mean, that's the way they socialize. It's the way they feel accepted. It's the way they search for their identity. They look at trends. It's the quick and easy way to say, this is who I am, right? The shirt they wear, the shoes they buy, the car they drive, in my school, at least, the car they drive when they're 16 and they get on their birthday. And that's why it is so important for us as adults to be grounded in a truth that is Judeo-Christian, natural law approach, and is metaphysically sound. Teens go through incredible, parents out there who have teens, their roller coaster ride of emotions throughout their, from the time they're 12 until the time they're 18, is so erratic. It's hard to keep up with it sometimes, especially with girls, right? My mom raised one boy and four girls. I was the oldest, four younger sisters. And she told me later, she said, you know how much I love your sisters. But when it came to the teenage years, wow, I wish it would have been reverse, right? Four boys and one girl. It just seems like it would have been so much easier. And if it weren't for my mom, I would not be on this show, because she's the one really who taught me what it means to be Christ-like. And I watched how my mom, throughout the teenage years, it was not easy. She stood so strong. She was not a reed waving in the wind, as our Lord said. She knew what was right and wrong, and she stood by it. And we need to form adults now so that they have the inner strength and the wherewithal to teach their kids to push through some of these emotional meanderings that they're going to experience.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Timory Jaja, here I have in studio Patrick Reedy, who has been working with young men, boys, for years, from seminary formation, all boys high school, to now working at J. Sarah High School, really working that faith development formation on campus here in Southern California. Now, Pat, I have a question for you. We're going to get in a second into the male-female antidote for what's going on in our culture. But I have to ask, in your experience, why do you think today so many young boys, and again, I don't say that in the sense that there are so many that are actually coming out, but it's become more of a trend of young boys identifying as transgender.
We only have 12 minutes for the segment, right? So
11 minutes and counting.
I'll try to sum it up as best I can. Gosh, I think there are so many factors at play tomorrow, but if I was just going to pick out three, I'd say one, just in general, the trajectory of a boy to a man in some ways is more pernicious than the trajectory from girl to woman. And that is because the vocation of woman to motherhood is stamped as Christopher West describes, applying the theology of the body, much more into the female body than the vocation of a man, which is really to go out from himself and act on the culture. And so boys are, in a sense, when they're young, they look tough, but they're more fragile. In many ways, they're much more fragile than girls. And so there's a certain susceptibility that they have in their upbringing to ideas. Two, boys mature a lot more slowly than girls do. And so their maturation process, I think, plays into this. And then three, our culture in the last 50 years has been extremely emasculated. Right? We live in a feminized culture. So you put these three things together, that boys, there's a certain, they have encounter a certain fragility as they're being raised. They need an incredible amount of validation and affirmation from their dads in order to believe in themselves and have a secure identity. Almost none of us get that in our culture. They mature later. And three, we've so feminized the culture that we've created a hotbed of confusion for boys. Now you throw on the top of that sundae this cherry, that the first time a boy or a girl experiences any type of attraction to the same sex, and it could simply be a platonic attraction, in other words, finds the body of the same sex attractive, the culture sweeps in and says, you know what, that's probably a sexual romantic attraction. You should experiment with that. It's super common, I can tell you this from working in schools all my life, it's incredibly common for boys and girls when they're coming into puberty to be attracted to the body of adults of the same sex. It's very normal for a girl to look at her mom or her older sisters or her aunts and find their mature figures attractive. They're hoping, they're seeing their future, and they want to grow into that. And they even probably have dreams about what they hope their body might look like, right? Am I going to win the lottery or not? Right? Boys do the same thing. I mean, boys see a ripped guy, and a ripped guy's body is attractive. There's nothing sexual about that. It just is. It's just like looking at a work of art. You look at the David. You should find that attractive, whether you're a man or a woman. The challenge is if there's already a feminization happening, if the boy is having a difficult time identifying with his own sex, and then he starts to see, he has this longing to be a real man. Then he starts to be attracted to the male body, which is natural.
Attracted to what the body is as an ideal for himself, not an attraction on the level of desirous in a sexual way.
Correct. That gets very confused for a boy at the time of puberty. Mm-hmm. So if someone enters into that, right, short circuits the process of human development, doesn't allow it to push through to its end, as you mentioned earlier, that 98% of boys and 80, almost 90% of girls, even if it does become a type of eroticized attraction, it's going to go away because they're going to mature out of it. If someone sweeps in and short circuits that and says, no, you know what, you may be gay. Now you throw the boy or the girl into utter confusion. I think boys are even more susceptible. So I'm talking about homosexual attraction there, but the transgender issue is, follows the same pattern.
Yes, I could totally see that. This is interesting because this is part of the story of many people who have come out sharing about their same-sex attracted experience even. For example, Daniel Mattson talks quite a bit about it.
Yeah, and he's a great speaker on the topic.
Yes, Daniel Mattson, if you have not read his book or at least listen to the interview where I interviewed him a couple of summers ago, Daniel Mattson, please go listen to it. You can find him on Radio Trending, search in Daniel Mattson, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, or read his book, because he talks about that. He idealized the male body. There was this attraction to what was manly. He wanted to be like that in high school. He liked to see the jocks. And, you know, don't we see this in little girls as well? Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory. That is Patrick Reedy. I am Timory Jaja. For a perfect example of this, Patrick, is a little girl who's sitting there stuffing her shirt with toilet paper or with, you know, water balloons full of air to make it look like she has a chest. Or I remember when I was a little girl, I loved my mom's shoes and I swore, I want big feet. I want big feet. It's funny, I have bigger feet than all the rest of the girls in my family. I wished upon myself.
Your prayer was answered.
Because I wanted to wear the high heels.
You want to wear high heels. Yeah. I was just saying, a perfect example is girls from the time they're even 3 or 4 years old sometimes will show up in the kitchen where mom and dad are sitting and they'll be in their older sister's dress and they'll be in their mom's high heels and they'll do a pirouette, right? Because that deepest question on a girl's heart and every woman's heart is, am I beautiful?
Yes.
Yep.
But also, sometimes the little boy is going to put on the mom or the older sister's clothes as well, trying to understand what it means to get older. Because reality is most little kids don't really understand sex differences. I think I was like 8.5 years old when my brother was born. And for the first time, I finally understood, there's a difference. There's a difference there.
You're right. Kids don't understand that until an older age. And that's why, and one of my go-to people for this topic, because he's a psychologist, and he doesn't come out as a Christian. Right? He's talking about all of these issues simply from a secular point of view, with incredibly in-depth studies behind him to support his theories. And he's on the front lines as a gentleman by the name of Dr. Leonard Sachs, and he wrote a book called Why Gender Matters, and I recommend that for anyone who's interested more in this subject. But one of the things he points out is that some of the studies that have been done with 3 and 4 year old boys and girls prior to their ability to have any understanding of gender or sex shows that when you give boys and girls the option to play with toys, you have a pile of girls' toys and boys' toys. You've got dolls, you've got trucks and plastic guns. Almost every time, 9 out of 10 boys will choose freely to play with the trucks and the guns, and the girls will choose the dolls. If that's not convincing enough, the same thing happens with primates. Male primates will choose trucks over dolls, and females will choose dolls over trucks.
The animals growing up?
These are monkeys.
Really?
Monkeys will do the same thing, right? So, I mean, come on. If you can't believe the monkeys, then who are you going to believe?
Yeah.
That just goes to show you that this is not, we haven't been culturally conditioned, as our society likes to tell us, into making a distinction between boys and girls. They really are innate properties that we carry that have been stamped in our bodies and in our psyche by God.
Patrick, I'm so happy that you're joining us for two shows this week, because we could go in so many directions here. So if you're listening, please head over to radiotrending.com to catch a second episode that Patrick will be on with us, where we're talking more about masculinity and the development of that coming up. But I want to look at this from the perspective, you know, little girls, for example, they like to build things and they like to kind of look at the beauty of something. And adult women love to do the same thing. But specific to boys, boys are always either making something or breaking something. And I remember when a friend of mine said that to me this past summer, said, yeah, one thing my mom taught me about boys, either give them something to make or give them something to break. And as she's saying that to us,
mom,
we have, you know, the time and my fiance and her husband with us, and we're out at the beach or something and they're getting bored. And so all of a sudden I look to the left, and within 30 seconds of her saying that, they found some bush that was dead and dry, and they grab a stick and they're starting to whack at it. It was just so comical, making something or breaking something at all points.
I love that phrase, because I've used it myself for many, many years. And so maybe the Holy Spirit was working between that mom and me, right? Boys make things and break things, right? There's something that's stamped into the very person of a boy that is an energy of sorts, right? It's his proclivity to go out from himself. We even see it in his body, right? He's made to go out from himself and to give love in that way. I think you can think of masculinity in one sense as men and women are both strong, but we're strong in different ways. Maleness is strength advancing, whereas femaleness is strength inviting, right? Encircling.
I love that. Say right? That again.
Men and women are both strong in our own ways, but maleness is strength advancing, right? Mm-hmm. towards a goal, and sometimes just having to destroy things in its way, whereas femaleness is strength inviting or embracing.
We build up what is in the culture. And I think that this is a really important thing to recognize, because I think some of our greatest challenges as male and as female, our tendencies towards sin, for example, gossip and divisiveness among women, that is exactly against our nature of what builds in and makes. I mean, think about when you're growing up, who's the person that made you feel the most welcome when you were at someone else's house? It was the mom. The mom reminding the girls, okay, make sure you include everyone, make sure everyone, you know, has what they need. There's that building up. Yet gossiping and, you know, kind of creating the cliques and really pushing people out is the exact opposite of our nature.
Yes, and the beauty of the theology of the body applied, because John Paul II didn't say all these things, but we take his principles and we apply them to reality, and we realize that he's giving us the why behind being male and female. Everything just starts to fall into place. Mm-hmm. And then you start to understand how the male body and the female body have a purpose. And once you understand that purpose, then you even see how our flaws come out of living in our fallen human nature. And that's why we need Jesus Christ to redeem our masculinity and femininity.
Patrick Reedy, where can people find you?
People can find me. If you want to email me, my email is instasun1, instasun1@gmail.com.
Awesome. And you have a podcast as well, which we'll link to. So head over to Radio Trending to learn more about our guest.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To learn more about Timmery Millington, visit timmery.com.